Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 316. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing these episodes for you for free. Without them, I wouldn't be able to do it, and I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and Train Heroic has a fantastic product. But they're even better people. So if you're interested, please reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them next time that you see them at a conference or whatnot. This week, I'm joined by a legend, a guy that I've known for a long time and looked up to for a long time. And when I was a young 23-year-old head strength coach, Coach Gentry was one of the first people that I reached out to for advice and just built a friendship since then, and a guy that I respect a tremendous amount. So, Mike, I just really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Coach, you've been in this field for a long time. You had 34 years, really split between two places, East Carolina and Virginia Tech, mostly at Virginia Tech. Rather than kind of go down the journey question, you know, which time period, when you first got to Virginia Tech, or when you were building the program, or when you started to work on your PhD and write books, which time period really developed you as the person that you are today?
Well, I tell you the truth. Honestly, my start at East Carolina in 1982 with head coach Ed Emery, that was the biggest impact on me. I was young and impressionable, and I was just very lucky to get into a program that had a head coach that was he's gone now. But he was an iconic leader, motivator. He valued strength and conditioning. He actually had roomed with George Dostal down at Clemson, the first strength coach there. So he had a real appreciation for it, former high school coach. And just the way he was able to mold the team and lead them through the team. And I've kind of modeled that a little bit as I went through to try to motivate the individual through the team. And made a huge impact on me, taught me how to be a coach as much as anything else. So that was the time period. And then I think the more money that got into our profession,
right,
the worse it got in some ways. Not always, of course, but, so those times that we weren't making much money and that we maybe didn't have the finest facilities still were some of the best times. That's just an opinion, of course.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, first 10, 7 years at South Florida, we were in a 2,000 square foot weight room with, I had 10 groups and ate a sandwich on the floor for lunch each day. It's amazing. One thing that I really enjoyed that you said there that I want to highlight is the fact that I think so many times, especially as a young strength coach, we only kind of stay within our profession, and we look to leaders within our profession. But I mean, we're surrounded as coaches around some of the best head coaches, sport coaches,
right,
on the planet, and learning from them and how to manage a team, manage time, people, and resources. That's the job when you become a head strength coach.
In East Carolina at the time, and maybe now also, was a place that coaches, kind of like Miami of Ohio, that was a cradle of coaches.
Yeah.
And they were, John Zernhill, Phil Almation, just several more that were really good coaches, and I learned from them as well as Coach Emery. So,
and I've been guilty of that in the past, where I've I've been in with the head coach, or I've been in with the AD, and I've almost had a kind of a standoffish relationship with some of the assistant coaches.
Well, that's reality.
Yeah,
you got to hold your ground,
Sometimes
you do have to hold your ground in our profession, and you coach your position and I'll coach mine kind of thing. That's true.
And sometimes that's warranted for that, for sure, but there are also coaches that are going to go on to do some really good things, and that's a great opportunity, like you said, with the head coach of East Carolina, rooming with the first strength coach of Clemson, to yep. really help mold them in what strength conditioning coach can do for them in their journey as well. So I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I always talk about the biggest mistake. You know, we've all made a million of them, but you know, what's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made in your career?
And how? I'm sorry. I've made so many mistakes, right? And some of them, you know, were aggressive, and I was just trying to do things better, and you know, wouldn't do it again. Kind of, you learn from your mistakes. But I would say the one thing that I was too selfish, and it became a little bit too much about me at times. And I think that's part of being younger too. But I wish I had cared about those guys a little more after a loss. You know, I tried to do that, but I could have been better at it. And I tell you, I tried to go see kids that were in the hospital, but I didn't see them all. And I wish I had done a better job with that, because sometimes you're the only guy, especially during the season, you might be the only coach that goes by there. Right. So, you know, I wish I'd have been a little more we and a little less me.
What a great – that's some fantastic advice. I think, you know, so many times we get caught up in the chasing, you know, chasing the wins and chasing the dollars or the power or the authority. And we wouldn't have that job without those athletes and, you know, them being essentially our customers. You know, we got to take care of them.
You know, none of them go out there to play bad.
No.
Or lose. So, you know, I wish I'd have done a little better at that.
You know, you're 34 years, I mean, especially – how many years was it at Virginia Tech?
29 seasons.
I mean, I'd venture to say that's probably never going to even be replicated again in our profession, you know, to spend that long at one place and to be able to retire as a strength coach. What's in that time period and what you see now, what's the good, the bad, and the ugly of the profession?
Well, the good of the profession now is you can make a good living as a head strength coach. There's money there. The bad is you're so specialized and joined at the hip with your head coach, be it basketball, football, and I think baseball is going to be that way too, that you are going to have a hard time having a long career, or at least a long career at one place. And that means you're going to have to move. Right. And when you move, if you've got a family, that can be pretty traumatic. So I always valued the opportunity to stay here and build it here. And I'm glad Coach Beamer decided to do that, because obviously he had some chances, opportunities to go. And this was his home, and I just felt like it became our home. So that's the good. And it's really fulfilling to build something and see it come. You know, like you said, you had the 2,000 square foot weight room, and that's not the way you left it.
Right. And,
that's fulfilling. So, but those days where you're coaching more than one sport and you're also on that floor, like you were also talking about, man, that's great. Because I always wanted to finish my day with a team that was a little different from football. So I could go home happier maybe or something. But the variety of training different athletes and was good. It was good.
You mentioned that, you know, the pay increases. And, over 34 years you saw it go from – what'd you come in making at Virginia Tech?
At Virginia Tech I made $30,000.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I made $9,000 my first year as head strength coach at South Florida. I mean, it has gone to the point to where I feel it's almost a pay bubble right now that we're in, where
right.
coaches and strength coaches, and especially the discrepancy between the haves and the have nots. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we get that pay, you know, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people that talk at these clinics and different things about, you know, just don't take a job for $30,000 or just don't take a job for 20 something thousand when you're, you know, you should hold out for more money or this, that, or the other. What's your advice to these young coaches, or what's your advice to the coaches that are in the profession that have the opportunity to change it on how we can increase the bottom?
I think the bottom's going to increase as long as the bubble doesn't burst, because I've seen that happen. I mean, it's just the assistants at Virginia Tech now make over twice what I made as the head person then. And you know, just globally, the tide rises all boats, you know. So I think that it is improving, and it's improving across the board. It's just not you know, sometimes the money can just get to be so much that you can't even relate to it. I was not in one of those positions, but I appreciated what had happened. I mean, there's no question about that. But
sure,
I don't know how to answer that question really, but I think that it has improved, and you can get in this profession and have a good lifestyle without being the head guy at the university. I do believe that. I've seen that. So,
yeah, I think, you know, the challenge, I think, is that I don't think it's growing at the same rate, you know. So, like, you know, back when, you know, 20 years ago when I got into it, or 30 years ago when you got into it, you know, the head guy was making maybe 30 and the GA was making, you know, 10 plus grad school or something, you know. Yeah. It was almost 50% of what the head guy was making. Now you got guys making $500,000.
Right.
The next assistant makes 90, you know, and the percentages aren't the same. I think, yeah, I know that you and I have talked about this a little bit since. What's your feelings on strength coaches kind of, because I don't think that in our lifetime as a strength coach that the market is going to answer necessarily where the assistant's going to be making even three quarters of what the head guy's making, or a half of what the head guy's making. So I think to do that, to try to provide that life, you have to create some additional revenue streams, be it maybe teaching classes or maybe writing books or those types of things. I know you've done a couple of those things when you're coaching. What's your advice for the coaches on how they can create some additional revenue streams?
Well, those are good ideas, and you've got more ideas on that line than I do. But I think number one, don't come into this profession if you don't love it more than it makes sense, because you're going to pour so much of yourself into it that it's not going to work out on a financial basis unless you love it and you want to be there and you're willing to do all the things that it takes. And quite honestly, those things have been increased so much over the years. You know, when I started at East Carolina, if we didn't have a football game on Saturday, I don't remember having to be all my weekends there. Well, that's changed. You know, all those things have changed quite a bit. So you really have to love it. And then, as you mentioned, if you do love it, you don't mind teaching a class or two about it that's related to it. And you don't mind writing books about it or having a website about it or those kind of things. You're looking for answers anyway. So you're studying all already, and you want to network with people, which is so incredibly important. I would suggest to new people coming into the profession, build your group of friends that you can pick up that phone and say, man, this sucks, or how do I do this, or how do you do this? And, you know, because that's going to be the kind of thing that's going to pull you through. So build your network, do clinics, you know, go see people and just work hard and build relationships with the people that I cared about the most. Maybe this was a little off. I wanted the respect of the athletes.
Right.
Maybe I should have cared more about the respect of some of the peripheral, but I really, my people were the athletes, and I wanted their respect, you know?
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree with you more. I would always use the example with young coaches that, you know, you take like the words are escaping me, like, you know, the Doctors Without Borders, or the, you know, the groups like that travel, the missionaries and things on those lines. I mean, they're doing some phenomenal work, you know, and getting next to nothing to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
So there has to be a passion that transcends the money question for sure. But I also think that we're in the first 100 years of the profession, and we have an obligation to try to make it grow you know, top and bottom. So I think there is a challenge there, a dichotomy that we have to, you know, kind of balance the two, you know. Yeah. You're right. You don't, if you're not in it for the right reasons, you won't last, in my opinion.
No. And maybe along those lines, you know, both through the CSCCA and the NSCA, the more professional accreditation is maintained and, you know, standards are upheld, you'll be rewarded for that. We have been rewarded to a certain extent. Maybe that will continue to grow. I hope so.
Yeah. So I, you know, probably about 10 years ago now, I spoke at one of the CSCCA or NSCA, I can't remember which one it was, but I led a round table with, you know, however many hundred coaches in the room, and had everybody stand up, and I said, you know, sit down if you can't name five strength coaches that have retired being a strength coach.
Right.
And pretty much the entire room sat down. You know, you're one of the guys that has retired being a strength coach.
Well, I tell you what, I joked with Joey Batson's one of my buddies, and I said, Joey, you've got as much chance of seeing an albino black bear in the New River Valley as you do of seeing a 60-year-old head strength coach.
That's 100% true.
That's about right. You know, I can't think of very many other than himself that have been able to persevere on, you know, or to get past that glass ceiling or whatever you want to call it. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I think you would agree with this, is that it, you know, it was as much luck as it was skill for you to stay at Virginia Tech for as long as you have, or Joey to be at Clemson for as long as he had. Both phenomenal coaches, phenomenal, you know, situations, and the work that you did there is phenomenal. You know, but, you know, with the head coaches changing jobs as much as they're changing jobs, now the rules where these players can basically transfer, you know, anytime, at any point.
Right.
You have to re-recruit your team each year. I mean, this is – it's getting crazy, I think.
Well, it's bad. You know, I think that free agency situation coming – you know, to me, it ruined professional sport, especially football, where your team doesn't stay together. And now to filter down into the collegiate ranks where, you know, we're trying to teach kids beyond the game. We're trying to teach them some principles that they can take with them and apply – later in life, and I don't think that supports that at all. So it's becoming more and more transactional and less transformational, and that's not why I loved it. I love the part where you're developing people.
100%. Well, you know, I was getting to with the retirement question is now that you know that you've gone through this profession and you've retired being a strength coach, what two or three things that you know now that you wish you knew 10, 15 years ago about how to better prepare yourself for this time period?
Well, I tried to do that, and I'm actually teaching some classes now. One thing that I always thought, Ron, was learn your profession, try to do a good job at your profession, and then teach others how to do the profession. To me, that was the that's what I wanted to do. That's what made sense to me. And so that I'm thankful Virginia Tech allowed me the opportunity to get a graduate degree, to get an EdD in education, really at their cost.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I could turn that down. So that opened some doors. Right now I'm adjuncting at Baker University, just starting that process in an online situation for doctoral students in education. And I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it. So think about what you want to do when it's, you don't want to run out of the tunnel anymore, or when you don't want to be on the bus, you know, because at some point that's reality.
Right.
So, I think it'll be different for different people. Some people like to do some personal training. Some people like to get in the private sector that way. But for me, it's been more about education. And I'd love to get, if I can work that into a situation where I am a little more specific to strength coaches or people that want to get into this business, that would be ideal for me.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I talk about it, you know, I think there's, you know, three things that we need to be doing as a community right now. I think one is we need to be fighting to put a strength coach at every high school. That needs to be our number one priority. Right behind that is I think we need to create kind of a high performance manager or an associate AD that's in charge of sports performance.
Yes.
That, you know, for our aging strength coaches to go. And then lastly, I think that we need to actually have a legitimate degree in strength conditioning, just like there's a legitimate degree in athletic training.
Right.
And that also gives a place for our aging strength coaches to go to teach, to make the community better. And if you do that, I think then that's going to lead to more research and better standards and better overall professionalism.
Well, you hit all the things that I think were exactly right. You know, what has happened in the profession is the strength coach, if you're really answering mainly and only to the head football coach or basketball coach, that I don't think is the best situation. I think Boyd Epley created a model for us out there at Nebraska 25 years ago, where you have somebody that really understands the profession and understands the needs across the board managing at these universities as an administrator. But that's not the model that I'm seeing. I'm not seeing that model. The coaches don't want it, and I don't think the administrators necessarily want it. So that means you're going to have ebbs and flows with your strength and conditioning or athletic performance programs. I think as I'm teaching this class that I'm teaching right now, we talk about deep smarts, and that you develop deep smarts over time, and that's wisdom. That's the closest thing you're going to get to wisdom. So if you are in a teaching situation where you're teaching people that want to get into this profession, it does make sense to have people there that have made the mistakes.
100%.
So I'm with you all the way on that.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree more with you. And the wisdom piece, I mean, the wisdom piece comes from making those mistakes that we talked about at the very beginning of the conversation and finding a way through it. And I think that the challenge that we have now is we you know, not to sound like a crotchety old man, but we have a generation that's got a fear of failure. You know, they're used to pushing reset on the video game, you know, anytime it wasn't going their way. And they're not willing to fail and put themselves out there and be vulnerable to fail, which is the only way we knew how to do it, you know, 20 and 30 years ago. And I don't think coaches have changed. I don't think athletes have changed. I just think that fear, that vulnerability, that's the part that's been tough to get through. So when you have that, and you don't have the right people teaching them how to put themselves out there, or at least, you know, people like yourself and others that are saying that it's okay to not have all the answers.
Right.
You know, then it becomes a highly testosterone driven type alpha type of profession. It becomes tough.
Yeah. Well, I think most of our athletes will forgive our mistakes as long as they know that we sincerely care and that we're in it for the right reasons, and we, you know, want to help them be successful, and they feel that through our actions. They understand that you're going to make mistakes if they're made in that, you know, context.
You know, one of the models that exists right now is, you know, for strength coaches to fall in the sports medicine model and be a part of the sports medicine team. And I mean, I know you and I both, you know, highly value the profession of athletic training and sports medicine, but I think we would both agree that it's a different profession than strength and conditioning. What's your thoughts on strength coaches lying there? Or if you disagree with that, where do you think that they should lie in those requirements?
Well, I think it depends on the individuals involved, and there can be, like, I was very fortunate at Virginia Tech. The head trainer, for lack of a better accolade, was Mike Goforth. He was great. We could have worked together, and we did work together, but I didn't report to him, and he didn't report to me, and I thought that was a better model, that we almost shared the same authority, I guess you'd say, in the organization, but there was a great respect factor. So, yes, I don't think we were ever working. We shouldn't be working at odds. I know in some places that it's that way, but we didn't. And I think we both appreciated the fact that we weren't working for either one of, you know, either one of us were doing that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know, it's something that I have trouble with, because I think, honestly, I think the NSCA and the CSCCA both are trying to kind of push us into that model, or maybe it's the NCAA that's really trying to force us into that medical model, and we're being compliant with it. But I don't believe it's the right path for the profession. I think
the happiest day in the NCAA's life would be if we had no strength coaches.
There's probably a lot of truth to that.
That's the way it feels to me, that that they see us as unnecessary problems.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you know, again, it goes back to just an overall professionalism within our profession. We have to do a better job. I think the education piece, again, we're Frankensteining strength coaches, where they're coming to us either biology majors or exercise science or PE or, you know, maybe not even a science related field sometimes, and we're making them strength coaches. We got to do better in those regards, but I agree with you. I think that's the number one challenge that we have as a profession, is we haven't found a way to evaluate a strength coach. Mm-hmm. So therefore we don't really have a way to create any kind of security from it.
Well, I'm not on the inside right now of the CSCCA, but they appear to be looking for better entry-level degrees that are more related to the field. And, you know, they obviously have an internship program, but they also have a something that must be signed to maintain your that have professional standards. Right. And it's a steps in the right direction. I think that what you're saying is try to act a little more professional if you want to be treated more professionally, maybe. And perception, you know, is part of that.
Yeah, totally. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the there's NSCA, CSCCA, made up of a lot of great people doing a lot of great things and working on our behalf. And what we fail to realize sometimes is that it's a membership brand organization. So without involvement of the membership and just pointing fingers, nothing gets done either, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why we got to do it. But I know I mentioned, I think you and I maybe even talked about this one time, where my advice every year since I started going to the CSCCA was that the masters, people that get their jacket, should be the presenters that year, you know. And,
yes,
you know, and you know, that way, they're sharing their knowledge, which I think is the most important piece.
I think that's good. Okay, still there?
Yeah, I'm saying I must have hit the button there or something. But the, you know, I think that it gives back. But it, you know, the biggest piece of that is it creates involvement, and we all have an obligation. Like I said earlier, I think, you know, if you can go back to any other profession, you could be a part of the first 100 years. We all have an obligation to document more and to contribute more and to be a part of it more. And instead of sitting on our hands and complaining about it, what everybody else is not doing.
Can I share one thing here? I've got all of my results over 29 years at Tech, and I've got all of the training that went with those results. And, you know, we tried to be consistent in how we evaluated and tested athletes, football particularly. So I'm working with Dr. Tony Catarazzano right now. I want to have a great longitudinal study to say, okay, what did affect speed, where were the correlations, where were those kind of things. So I'm looking forward to sharing that out too.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, I think that again goes back to what we're saying is one of the three things that needs to happen is our leaders, guys like yourself, need to be giving, you know, need to be educating the next batch, you know. And so many times I think it's we're pushed kind of out to the side and in favor of whatever the flavor of the month is, you know, and that's got to be something that we change for sure. Well, Coach, we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
I guess the coaching advice is from Johnny Parker, coach the kid, not the weight. Sure, a lot of people may have said that in the past, and I've watched him work, had that opportunity, and I've known him for a long, long time, and it was authentic to him. and it made sense to me. So coach the kid, not the weight, would be one of the top ones. I got a Buddy Morris for you too.
Yeah, good.
It's not always whether the program's working or not that's successful, but how hard the athlete is working or not that creates the success. I thought that was a great quote.
Both great coaches, both fantastic quotes. I just talked to Johnny earlier today, so.
Oh wow!
It's awesome.
He's great.
What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
I'm not looking at a lot of websites, but I'm gonna tell you, this is the book, the number one for me, "The Strongest Shall Survive" with Bill Starr. You know, it's interesting. This book I read in college changed my life, made me want to realize I could be. That there was a strength coach, but at any rate, I've seen online some people written a couple. Some young people have written some bad reviews about this book that is dated and things like that. And man, I'd like to line up against you guys.
Yeah, right.
This book's relevant. This book is relevant, and I hope. And it's harder to find now, but it ought to be in your library, in my opinion, if you're going to be coaching power athletes.
Yeah, it's right over there. What about any apps that you use or productivity type stuff?
You know, I was supposed to write those things down. The Art of Manliness is a website that I look at some, and I like what he's all about. I like where he goes back and talks about Teddy Roosevelt and different things, those kind of guys. I've become a stronger person of faith as I've gotten older, and if I could – you know, what good is it for a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? So I think that's super important. And that's Matthew 16:26. So I encourage everybody out there, if one person started to change a little bit in that direction, that would be great for me. So
100%.
It's helped me.
100%. Well, Coach, like I said in the very beginning, I mean, you're a person that I've respected for a very, very long time. And
thank you.
This whole profession has owes you a debt of gratitude for
That's where you're wrong, Ron. I owe the profession more than they ever owed me. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'd like to say before we get off here that I always knew how you were professionally and structured and organized, but I didn't know your heart till I heard you speak in South Carolina in 2017. And that's what makes the difference for all of us as coaches, really. I think we can approach it a lot of different ways, but if our heart is right, it's going to be all right.
Well, only a person that has it knows it, and I appreciate that. It's very kind. And I know you've got some things going on, with teaching, and I know you've done some work with high schools and consulting and things like that. Do you still have your website up and going?
Well, I tell you, we just took down High School Strength for various reasons. I thought we had some really good content on there, and I think our program was good. But there were just I want to do some different things. We've got a Facebook page called Sweat Leadership. I invite everybody to check that out, and I've got some ideas. Obviously, when I'm teaching, I want to take this. Data that I've collected and do something with that. And I've got another book idea in mind too. So I've got your book here. I've got another book by Jeff Connors right here that's on leadership. They're both great. I mean, sometimes I say I'm a book collector, but because I need to read more of it.
Behind you.
Yep.
No, Coach.
Anyway, I got things going on. I want to keep growing.
Well, that's the thing that I've all, I look back and you were the first strength coach that I knew that went and got your PhD. You were one of the first strength coaches that I knew that had put out a book that I knew personally. And those things inspired me to where I should be finishing my PhD here pretty soon. And
awesome.
I've got my second book out and those types of things. So
Right. The
what you've done for me in my career, I appreciate it. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much. Take care.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefry can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefry, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefry. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.